Welcome everybody to another podcast, Kukubri Book Week, with Chris Walker here and Jerry Hassan. Morning, Jerry.
Good morning.
And our victim today is Anne Blockwich from Dumfries. Good morning,
Good morning.
Anne. And Anne is author of What Goes Around, lives in Dumfries, a lifetime crime fiction fan, who is appearing on Monday the 27th of February, along with Jackie Baldwin, Ian Robertson and John Dean on Walk on the Dark Side, which is at Broughton House at 7:30 in the evening, which is going to be an amazing event, I think. So, Anne, welcome to Kukubri, where this has been recorded.
Thank you for asking me.
Not too far from Dumfries, which is home to you. How long have you been in Dumfries now?
It'll be 6 years next month.
Fine, and where was home before?
The home before was just outside Wolverhampton, in a small village called Codsall.
Oh, lovely.
And I lived there for about 16 years.
So, is there any of your crime writing based on that neck of the woods?
Yes.
I thought it was.
All of it.
Is it? Yeah.
Which is why I live so far away. No, it's not, that's not true. No,
we've had that conversation before with them.
Yeah, we have.
Well, Wolverhampton's one of those cities that it seems to have fallen down the pit and nobody can be bothered to get out.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of, they've, people have accepted where they are and not doing anything to. It's almost like the, to quote Wallace and Gromit, the bounce has gone out of their bungee.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Detective Alex Peachey.
Yes.
Has come from there.
He does, yes, he does.
Is he based on anybody you knew or know?
Well, funnily enough, when I started writing it, he had a completely different name and I couldn't think of a name. And then I woke up one morning with that name in my head and I thought, that's really strange. And I went to school with a guy called David Peachey, who's a really good friend. So I messaged him and said, can I use your surname?
Yeah.
And he went, not a problem. I said, do you want to be in the book? And he went, okay, so he's Alex's brother, Dave. So I sort of said, right, tell me what you've been doing since we left school, because I don't know. So he was in the army, and he's now a master builder, which is exactly what Dave's got. And really? He's got this Dave in the book. He's very much like the real Dave.
Gosh, wow. So tell me life before you started writing crime, though. Let's go back in time a bit.
Right, let's start right at the beginning. I used to be a full-time carer. I've got a disabled son. Uh-huh. My eldest son's got cerebral palsy and Asperger's. Mm-hmm. And so I spent most of my time being his carer. And then I was at the school one time with a friend of mine, and when I was taking my youngest to school, and she pointed at this very scruffy man and said, do you know who that is? And I was like, no. And she said, that's Rebel Red. I went, who the hell is he? And she said, he's a male stripper, he's really famous. And I thought, ooh, he looks awful. Because he did, obviously he's dressed down. And then she took me to see him a few weeks later. I thought, okay, he looks a bit different now and a bit better. And then he recognised a few of us from the school, and then I booked him for my 40th birthday party, which crucified him. He said it was the worst show he'd ever done because he knew everyone in the room, which was funny. And then he said to me, so do you go to many of these? And I said, it's the only one. And he said, oh, I'm putting a group together. Could you find me somewhere to put the group on? So I became his unofficial promoter.
Of a male strip group,
which sounds wonderfully glamorous. And at first, you do tend to spend all your time looking at them thinking, oh my God.
Yeah.
But then you soon learn that they're like dealing with 6 foot toddlers, arguing over petty things, pulling silly pranks on each other.
Yeah.
One incident, which I think it might be in the second or third book, there are two of them, these big 6 foot four lads, wearing no clothes except their boots, arguing over who'd stolen whose hair bobble. So, and at this point, it had been a really busy week at school because I was on the PTA as well. And I just got to the point where I thought, I stood between them, I'm 4 feet 10. I stood between them and I shouted at them and said, sort yourselves out. I used a few more words than that, but they're very colourful.
Yeah,
I said, now you go over there and get dressed, you go over there and pack your stuff, and no more. And the whole room went deadly quiet, and I thought, I'm going to die. And they looked at me and they went, okay, and they walked away, and I thought, oh. And that's how it became. So if you put your mum head on, they were fine to deal with.
It's like stuff, isn't it?
How long were you then kind of the Brian Epstein of male stripping?
I mean, I was 41, so still looking after my son. He was at school.
Yeah.
I mean, he's last year, the year before, he moved into supported living, so I can now concentrate more on my writing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But one thing I'd noticed with fiction, and I'm going off topic here, a lot of the fiction I read, the main protagonist has got some sort of issue. He's either having an affair, or he's a drinker, or he's divorced. And I want my policeman to be happy. There are happy policemen out there, but he's got to have some sort of issue, so I gave him a disabled son.
Yeah.
And I based him very much on my own, because with Asperger's, one of the traits, unfortunately, is they can become quite violent. Mm-hmm. So this is what I did with Alex. So he's got the constant battle of being at work, and then he's having to deal with his son, who's now 17, 18, might be a little bit older, who's now starting to become quite violent towards his wife. And his wife's brushing it off, saying, and he's trying to bring social services in to help her out. She said, no, I'm his mum, I can deal with him, which is exactly what I did. He was, my son was never as violent to me as he is in, as Joel is in the book to his mum. But I wanted people to see that that was an actual thing. A lot of the time, if I called the police out to my son, they'd go, oh, but he's in a wheelchair. And my son would say, see, I told you they wouldn't arrest me. And that's... it's a difficult one.
Yeah, it's like poking the bear, isn't it?
It is. And after I wrote the first book, somebody came up to me at Harrogate, the crime festival, and said, was it you that wrote that book? And I said, yeah. She went, can I just say thank you? She said, because for showing that disabled people aren't all lovely. She said, because my cousin has been regularly beating up my aunt for years, but she now knows she's not on her own. Wow. And I thought, wow, that was the message I wanted to get across, that... you know, it's not all sweetness and light. He might sort of smile at people and get the meat out of his hand, but then he's come at me with a hammer before.
So did you write this book whilst you were caring for your son? So actually, this is really—it's
quite really cathartic. I mean, that's what something I wanted to address, issues or concerns I have through my books.
Yeah. And how did you find the time?
Well, he's very independent. To be fair, I mean, he'd be perhaps at a day club, and I'd do a bit of writing then, or. He spent a lot of time on his computer, so while he's on his computer, I was on mine. So it was just filling in. I mean, the first book took 7 years to write, but that was mainly to get it right, because I knew...
I was going to ask you, Anne, then, so this has been percolating for quite a while then. What was it... I know in your resume, as you said, you went to the Harrogate Crime Festival, and that was one significant, but was that it? Was that the major thing? I want to write, I've got this set of stories and characters.
My daughter found that, and we went, and we sat and I was just saying before, was... Jeffrey Deaver was there, who's my all-time favourite writer. And he sat on the stage and said, if you've ever read a book and thought, I can do better, then you can. And I looked at my daughter and she went, you can do this, Mum. You should do it. And I said, shall I go for it? She went, yeah, just go for it. And then he said something about rejections. He said, yes, people talk about rejections. He said, I had over 200 rejections for The Bone Collector. Wow. He said, and obviously in the days before the internet, he said these were all came through the post.
Of course.
So I wallpaper my downstairs toilet with them, because then I can always see where it keeps me grounded and shows me how hard I've worked. And I thought, well, that's quite humble. And he's a very nice guy to chat to.
I've got my current electric bills in my downstairs. You know, that's the problem I've got facing. Everything's going up.
It is.
Wholesale prices are coming down.
Maybe I should kill an energy boss in the next book.
Could you do that for me?
I can do that. I can. Absolutely, it would be my pleasure.
Then you could have a whole series about going after the targets. Need to be gone after.
Yeah,
could be a whole other series genre.
So, Anne, when you're writing, and we've asked this question to everybody that's come through, do you have the whole plot and book mapped out?
No.
No, not at all.
Why
does nobody? Because I always thought that authors would have it all on the wall and say, that's the killer, that's next to that, that's the husband, that's the wife.
We're kind of split between pantsers who write like me and plotters. There are a lot of plotters out there who have spreadsheets and Scrivener and A.A. Dand, who's a good friend. He has a big, he has a friend who prints off an A1 chart, and he's got his protagonist in one colour, his antagonist in another, and he's got... So you can look at his wall and see exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I can't do that.
So you don't have the end in mind when you start?
Not always. I think I know, obviously, I want justice to be served. And I can't say anything about the end of the first book because it will give away some things. But I kind of knew what the theme... I mean, long story short, I fell out with this male stripper. And... then I thought, well, I've met quite a few nice ones, but I've also met some really awful ones just along the time I've known him. So I sort of amalgamated all the nasty bits into one man.
Yeah.
He doesn't come off very well.
What you described it, you said about people that write, you said planners, and what was the other genre you said?
Pantsers. It means flying by the seat of your pants.
I see.
Pantsers,
yes.
Okay.
And then there are planters who do a bit of both.
Ah, right.
When I wrote the first book, I'd written the first the chapter, the prologue. Not right, so I know I want someone to be killed. And I know the last line is, I'll take the swear words out, it says, as she as the light begins to fade, she hears someone say, "What the hell are you doing?"
Mm.
So it's obvious that someone's seen what's going on.
Yeah.
And then it skips forward to...
And you know, before Harrogate, because there is an issue about what's people about writing and, you know, confidence and all sorts of things, voice and so on. Had you written anything before or thought about writing before?
No, not at all. I mean, I when me and my son were having arguments, I'd sometimes sit down and open a Word page and write down all the things I'd do to him if he was an able-bodied man.
Yeah.
I would do this to him, obviously, and then I can just delete it and it's out of my head and gone.
Yeah.
So it was almost a therapy. But then when I was out with one of the strippers one night, we were chatting backstage, and he was telling me all these stories. I went, "I should write a book about you lot." And he went, "If you did, it would do really well." And I think that's where the idea... And then I just forgot about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I started writing about my son. I thought, I could actually do something with this.
Yeah.
So crime writing then, did that come after the desire to write a book?
No, I always knew it wanted to be crime. I've got a bit of a dark side.
Because that comes across in sort of your bio here, that crime's always been your...
Crime's my favourite. I mean, I do like humorous books.
Yeah.
Mm. And if you can get both
in
the same book, J.D. Yeah. Kirk, I highly recommend him.
Yeah. But he's right about the characters in these books. I've just finished Irvin Walsh's last book. I can't remember the character in there who's the detective inspector, but he's an alcoholic.
You know,
he's always heading back to the flat in Brunsfield in Edinburgh for another swig from his bottle, and you know you're right, they all have some sort of hang up, don't they?
Yeah.
Everyone's got a problem, whether it be that they're heavily in debt or they're a gambler or you know, they look at pictures of tractors while they're at work.
Yes. Everybody's got a problem. Now, your book, Anne, nobody can currently buy it at the minute, can they?
Not at the moment, no. The publisher I was with, unfortunately, has ceased to trade.
Ah, that's right.
So it's been withdrawn, but I now have a new publisher, Red Dragon Publishing Limited, who have taken it on, and it's going to be re-released in February. I think it's the 25th of February.
Which is the day...
I think I should have some copies.
Should you? I was going to say that for 27th.
Touch wood, I hope I'll have copies.
Yes.
With its brand, because it's got, obviously, the previous... publisher owned the cover and the blurb, so it has to be repackaged under the new one.
Right.
And we're confident that the book two,
which
is called Goodnight, God Bless, will be out at the end of March.
All right.
Or beginning of April, thereabouts.
Great. So we'll be able to get your first book at the book festival and the second book at the end of March.
One of the issues we have...
Murder them on the next book.
So we'll cut. Start again.
Yeah, no, it's all right. I'll cut that out.
Walking along to this, I was thinking about lots of novels. We have an issue about how we represent modern life in Britain, just because there's so many challenges. And there is an issue about, like, privileged voices and so on, and people just, like, going on about their privilege without ever... But crime writing, I was thinking, is something different. Crime writing is eight more democratic, got more diverse voices, and maybe is one of the ways we explain modern life. Maybe that's one of the ways it's so popular. It gets you into so much.
It is. I suppose it's kind of the working class bracket of the book world, because everyone is so friendly and supportive.
Mm.
After I went to the first Harrogate, I went to, I think, pretty much everyone after that.
Mm.
And I'd say to people, people would say, "Oh, you write..." And I get a book signed by, say, Val McDermid. And she'd say, "Oh, so are you writing?" So I'd say, "Well, I'm thinking of writing." And she'd go, "Oh, well done."
Mm.
Yeah. And you think, she's such a huge name. And you think she's so... The same with Ian Rankin. I mean, Sir Ian Rankin, to give his proper title now. He's the same. You know, I asked him if he'd have a picture taken with me with my book, and he said, "Let's do that." And then I tweeted it, and then he retweeted it. So I thought, you know, everyone's there to hold each other's hand, and it's lovely. It really, really is.
Yeah.
I think I've only met one crime writer I don't like at all. But then he did something very stupid by advertising where you could get pirate books. Which is not a good idea.
No, not a good idea. Not
when you're at a big festival and you've got lots of other crime writers there who could do you harm and have an alibi.
So the second book...
Yes, Goodnight, God Bless.
Is Alex Peachey again?
It's Alex Peachey again. It's quite a lot darker than the first book.
Mm.
Obviously, in the first book there, the male strippers and drag queens.
Yep.
The drag queen, funnily enough, was one of the most popular characters, so I've been asked to bring her back. Okay. So I have.
Okay.
So she's... In the first one, she's present at the ladies' night when the murder happens, and she's also present later on at the hen night because one of Alex's teams is getting married.
Yeah.
So the girls back to a hen night and obviously a strip show and the drag queens on then. And then she turns up again for the stag do, which is hilarious because she coerces a member of the team to come on stage with her.
Right. When I get hold of this book, I'm really looking forward to writing it.
I will send you a copy. As soon as I've got a copy, I will send it to you.
That'd be fantastic. Thank you so much. And then the other thing, Anne, just to sort of finish off is, when you've written a book, is there a thought process, and do you start going down the line of, could this make television?
Yes, that would be the dream.
And how does that happen for an author? Do you have to put it in front of people, or does your publisher put it in front of people?
I think the publisher does it. I'm not really very well versed in that. I mean, I know my friend Mike Craven, M.W. Craven, who writes the Tilly and Poe series, he's just been signed up by a streaming service. There was a piece on the TV about him last week, and it's taken him 6 or 7 years to get there. But it's a great series.
Yeah, because
it'll make good TV.
Ian Patrick was in negotiations with his.
They can be a fickle lot. I think that some of them, they'll have 100 ideas. A bit like an agent, I suppose. You send off your manuscript, and he's got so many to look at, he can't pick them all.
You've just got to put the right one in front of the right person at the right time. And then they go, boom, this will make... I mean, when you look back at television series like Unforgotten, Happy Valley...
Happy Valley's amazing.
Those have obviously... They're very well written.
Yes.
I can't remember the name of the lady that writes those. It's just gone from me. She's a
Halifax... Sally Wainwright.
Sally Wainwright. She's a Halifax lass. Anyway, she went to Sawbury Bridge Grammar School. That's why it's all based around there.
Well, Bob Bridgestock, who consulted on it, that was his police station that they use in the series.
Yeah, and it is the actual
It's the actual police station. He said, she sits at my desk. He said it's quite nice because he can, you know, he knows the whole the whole place.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. To get that breakthrough onto television is I suppose it's secondary to writing the book, isn't it?
It is. I mean, we all watch things like Vera and Shetland and so on, and we all think, oh, that'd be great. And one of the things that people tend to ask a lot of crime writers is, who would play them on TV?
Yeah.
But everyone's got completely different ideas about, you know, I mean, I could say, oh, well, this person's,
you
know.
Yeah, a different picture. That everyone has a different picture of a character in their head, don't they?
Who would play Alex then?
In an ideal world, Sean Bean would play Alex, because I really like Sean Bean, but he's getting on a bit now. But I also like Ralph Ineson, because I wouldn't want a pretty detective. I want someone who looks like he's worked hard.
And he's
got a lovely voice as well. I know it's Northern vowels, but
hard-working man. So
working girl. Should have sat my friend outside the door.
Yeah, we should have done. But that's fine. I can cut those little bits out.
I was going to ask you then just about, because you know there's so much in your first novel and so many different worlds. Rock music plays a part.
Oh, I'm a big rock fan.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how that is important to you and who your heroes, heroines are.
Oh well, first and foremost, I'm a huge fan of Queen. But I love Thin Lizzy and I love AC/DC. And I listen to Planet Rock every day. It's that's how I timetable my writing. I like to try and have all the mum bits out of the way by the time Wyatt starts at 10 o'clock, and then I'll write until 4.
And tell us, for what people listening, what is Planet Rock?
Rock is an independent radio station, or part of a group of Bauer radio stations or something, but they're mainly available on DAB up here.
Yeah.
But they just play rock music all day.
It's a great radio station.
I mean, it's obviously different. I mean, Wyatt, for instance, is a big fan of Led Zeppelin and AC/DC. Darren in the afternoon, he's a prog rock fan, so you can all that sort of stuff. So they're all different. But yeah, I just love rock music anyway.
Any particular part of Queen? Because it's a long, long story. What's your favourite sort of Queen periods or tracks?
Let me think. That's a really tough one, because they come back every time with something new.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's a really hard question, actually.
Sorry.
No. I've never really thought about it.
Just give us some of your... You know, don't to be
my
like,
favourite Queen song is I Want It All.
Ah, very well.
Good track.
Because it just punches you right in the face. You know, I don't tend to... I do like the more popular ones, such as I Want to Make Free, but I like the other ones as well.
Yeah.
I'm in Love with My Car. That's a particular favourite.
Of course, yeah.
And which how do you is, find the Adam Lansdowne?
Oh, I think he's wonderful.
I do as well.
I think he's brilliant.
I think they've picked it so well, haven't they?
And he makes a cameo in the film.
Oh, yes, he does.
He does. If you've not watched, have you?
Of course. Personally, I'm a purist here. I don't think Queen exists now. Sorry, just no.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
There's the scene where Freddie Mercury is on the phone to Mary.
Yeah, that's right.
And the guy walks into the bathroom. That's Adam. That's Adam.
Of course it is. Yeah.
Very heavily made up to look like a big hairy trucker, but that's him.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yes, I hadn't spotted it, but I do remember.
No, I only spotted it because I saw a documentary and he pointed it out. But he's got an incredible voice. But like, Queen are not Queen anymore.
No, of course. Because some people try and argue they do, and I think, well, because people do leave all these sort of big storied bands, etc. You know,
John Deacon's not part of Queen anymore either.
Yeah,
because he said for him, it died with Freddie. Yeah, so fair enough. Yeah.
And obviously, you've seen them live many times.
Never seen them live. Oh. Heard them live once. Oh. I lived in my first husband is in the Air Force, and we were at Stanmore, which is just up the road from Wembley. Mm. So we parked outside Wembley Stadium and listened to them, me and my driving instructor. So I was on a driving lesson, and he said, "I want you to park up here." Okay. Yeah. Now, what, you put the windows down, and we could hear them. It was wonderful. Yeah. Well, and then we saw the Freddie shaped balloon float out of the top.
Because one of my favourite amazing musical moments. I went to Live Aid in 1985 at Wembley, and that, you know, and some of those acts were people like, you know, Status Quo, Queen, that weren't my favourites then, but the Queen set, obviously, you know, was just like incredible. And being there, and then you watch on television afterwards, and it's even more mesmerising, like 30 odd years later than it
when
was.
You think
the
he
day.
Was ill then as well.
I know.
You wouldn't think it to look at him then, but
And do you listen to music whilst you write?
Sorry, yes, always. I can't write in silence.
No, really? Yes.
No, I just find other things start to. I'm thinking things like, oh, really.
So music's your blocker.
Kind
music's
of, yeah.
Sort of your
I
blocker,
think it,
you focus it, on
it helps me go along.
Yeah. Good.
A.A. Dan likes to write to the Dark Knight soundtrack when he's writing his scenes. Because he said it makes him think that there's action going on. And I thought, well, I never really thought, I don't have particular songs for particular scenes. I just like to have something on in the background.
Wow. Yeah. Well, Anne, thank you so much for coming along today to talk to us. We're so excited about seeing you at the end of February here in Kirkcudbury.
I'm looking forward to it too.
Walk on the Dark Side. Hopefully you'll have your book with you.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to that second book.
Yes, and the second one. I want to read the first one first.
I know, me too.
Do you want to know what the second one's about?
No, because I don't want to spoil it. I know the Peachy will be in it.
Yes.
And you've sort of told us a little bit, but I don't like... Yeah, let's not give too much away. Anne Blokhovich, thank you so much for coming along.
Thank you
for asking me.
Pleasure.